Hi, I'm Andrew Brodsky, Mandarin professor and author of the new book, Ping, The Secrets of Successful Virtual Communication, which is about how to become a more effective virtual communicator in every interaction. Instant messaging, email, video calls, and other digital tools now account for the majority of our workplace interactions. Simply put, in-person communication is no longer the default. So regardless of whether you work in the office, remotely at home, or anywhere in between, we're all virtual communicators. In my book, I summarize the findings from hundreds of research studies and lessons from global business leaders on how to become a more effective virtual communicator in all your interactions. In reading a book, one of the things I personally find most useful in both business and general improvement books is when the author ties together their recommendations into a framework, so that when I walk away from the book, I can easily remember the core advice and takeaways. So that's what I decided to do in my book, Ping, where I introduced the aptly named Ping framework for how you can optimize your virtual interactions. The P stands for perspective taking, the I for initiative, the N for nonverbal, and G for goals. And today I have five key insights for you, with the first four centered on starting to introduce each respective dimension of the Ping framework, and the fifth looking forward to considering how AI might impact our virtual communication in the future. For the first insight, I focus on the first dimension of the Ping framework, P for perspective taking. It should come as no surprise that when we're interacting virtually, there are more likely to be misinterpretations and misunderstandings. But it's due to more than just the commonly cited fact that there can be fewer nonverbal behaviors when interacting over less rich communication modes. When you interact in person, it's hard to forget you're interacting with a human being, as they're standing right in front of you. But when it comes to interacting virtually, whether you're looking at a thumbnail-sized video of the person you're interacting with, hearing only their voice through the phone, or seeing nothing but their words in an email, it can be easy to forget there's another person on the other end of your communication. As a result, there's often a tendency to be more self-focused virtually than if we were interacting in person. To see what I mean in action, after this section, go ahead and pause this recording and think of a song you're confident other people would recognize. Then tap that song out on the nearest hard surface. Once you've done that, estimate how likely it is that if you were to tap that song out again with someone listening, they'd be able to identify it. The same scenario was played out by Stanford researcher Elizabeth Newton, and she found that participants expected that 50% of listeners would be able to correctly identify their song. In reality, though, listeners only recognize a song 3% of the time. That's a pretty huge discrepancy. And the reason for it is that when we hear the music in our head as we're tapping it out, so it seems obvious to us. But all the listener is just hearing is a series of taps. The same applies to our virtual communication. We may think our meaning was clear, but because we are so self-focused when interacting from behind a screen, we don't realize that the person on the receiving end doesn't have the same context or information for accurately understanding our meaning. So it may seem like an obviously friendly and supportive email to you may come off as condescending to your coworker if they aren't privy to the same information as you. The solution is to pause for a moment before sending or speaking a message virtually to take the recipient's perspective and consider how they might interpret it. One research-proven strategy for this in text-based communication is to take the message you wrote and read it aloud to yourself in a different tone than you intended. For instance, if it was a serious message, read it as sarcastic or enthusiastic, and vice versa. Does the meaning drastically change? Knowing that the voice someone hears when reading a message isn't necessarily the same one you heard while composing it will help you to avoid this kind of self-focused overconfidence that leads people to misinterpret our meaning virtually. The second insight is that when communicating virtually, it's important to take initiative to add in the lost information and interpersonal elements to your communication. And thus, initiative is the eye of the Ping framework. You may have heard about the Fyre Festival debacle back in 2017, when a team led by Billy McFarland created hype for a festival that was supposed to have the best of the best in food, music, celebrities, and even buried treasure. What festival goers actually found when they arrived were barren parking lots, soggy cheese sandwiches in styrofoam containers, and a lack of bathroom facilities. Pretty disappointing for what was billed as the biggest FOMO-inducing event of the year. This incredible mismatch in expectations and reality resulted in a $26 million fine and jail time for McFarland. But there's another takeaway that applies to our virtual communication. This takeaway? There's often a disconnect between impressions and reality, especially when you can't directly see the person and exact situation you're interacting with. Now let's flip this example to consider how this disconnect between impressions and reality in virtual interactions can make someone who works incredibly hard seem like a low performer. Imagine you're a manager with two subordinates. From one, you get a single 5-paragraph long email at the end of the week, every Friday, about the work they did for the week. From the other, you get a few short sentence update each day, just letting you know the tasks they did. Which one seems harder working? The one who sends you only one long email each Friday evening, or the one who briefly touches base with you each day? Despite the fact that both employees sent the exact same amount of text, if you're like most managers, you will say the employee who sends a brief few sentence update each day, because that employee seems like they are actually working each day, as opposed to the one who sends only a longer email on Friday, who might just be doing the exact same amount of work, but they only send one update. This is where the I, initiative, comes in for the Ping framework. As one key way in virtual communication that you need to take initiative is showing your effort. In virtual interactions, whether sending an email to your boss while working remotely, or just sending them an instant message from the next cubicle over in the office, without taking this kind of initiative, you end up in the out of sight, out of mind pitfall. So if your goal is to show effort and engagement, then taking that initiative to communicate more frequently, and similarly, turning on your camera more regularly during meetings, can help to show that you're physically and mentally present and putting in the effort into your work and interactions. These small extra steps make it more likely that those you interact with will perceive your work as equivalent of serving up a high-end lobster and steak feast, as opposed to just a fire festival soggy cheese sandwich. The third insight is related to the N, nonverbal, in the Ping framework, in that even when you can't see or hear the other person in virtual interactions, nonverbal signals are essential for conveying meaning and building rapport. A Canadian farmer got himself into trouble when he responded to a customer's text about an order of flaxseed with a thumbs up emoji. The issue was that the customer thought the thumbs up meant the contract was accepted. The farmer disagreed, as he hadn't planned on accepting it. However, the court sided with the customer, stating that the thumbs up emoji constituted a legally binding agreement, and the farmer had to pay almost $62,000. A question I often get from both undergraduates and MBA students is, should I use emojis in my virtual communication? The answer isn't a simple yes or no, because research shows emojis can both help or hurt depending on the situation. Regardless of whether the question is, should I use emojis or not, should I use exclamation marks, or anything else in text-based communication, my answer is always the same. Don't focus so much on what cues are best or worst, but rather pay attention to how the person you're interacting with is communicating and become a conversational chameleon. If they're filling their text with emojis and exclamation marks, then you should feel free to do the same. If they're using certain business jargon, follow their lead. If they take a more formal approach, it can behoove you to do the same. A study led by Kate Muir found that negotiators who mimic their partner's behavioral style by using similar nonverbal behaviors improve their individual outcomes by 39% and joint outcomes by over 30%. These mimicry effects are driven by two factors. First, we generally all think that we ourselves communicate in the best way possible. So by association, when someone else communicates like us, we of course think that they are doing it effectively. Secondly, we trust people who are similar to us. So when someone communicates to us in a way that feels familiar and comfortable, we tend to trust them more. It turns out that even in the barest of virtual communication modes, nonverbal behavior still plays a central role in how our messages are perceived by others. Insight number four is related to the final component of the Ping framework, the G, or goals. In that determining your goal for each individual virtual interaction will help you to choose the optimal mode and message. Should you schedule a meeting or send an email? Is phone or video the right choice for connecting with old contacts? What's the best mode to use when meeting someone for the first time? The fourth element in the PINK framework is goals, because too often people thoughtlessly approach these and similar questions by simply defaulting to whichever mode is right in front of them without considering the consequences. A while back, I was giving a talk to a group of retail executives, and someone asked a great question. What's the best mode choice when you need to display emotions you might not really be feeling, such as needing to seem excited during a customer interaction, even when you may be stressed or frustrated for unrelated reasons? In other words, service with a smile. I ran a series of studies on this very topic, using study contexts including negotiations, coworkers interacting with one another, and most interestingly, teachers and parents from a set of international schools in Vietnam. In this latter case, imagine you're a teacher in a school where parents pay a lot of money for their child to attend. Now you have to tell one of these parents why their perfect angel is failing your course and being suspended due to serious misbehavior. Despite your frustrations with the student, and likely the parents for not helping to improve matters, you need to put on your best smile to ensure the interaction goes smoothly. Not exactly an easy situation, but one many of us can probably relate to at work, whether it involves having to deal with an irate customer, or nicely having to tell our manager that their idea might not be as smart as they think it is. There were three key findings in these studies. First, if you're being truly authentic, then the richest mode of interaction, whether it be face-to-face or video, is best, as it comes off as the highest effort and thus lets your authenticity shine through. But what if you need to fake it? Would email be the best choice, as it allows you to hide your emotions? Well, I did find that people who indicated that they frequently had to engage in this kind of acting tended to choose email, but that was actually the worst choice. Because email seems so low effort as a mode of communication, it comes off as the most inauthentic when having to relay emotions. Interestingly, I found that for those who aim to appear authentic while still needing to mask underlying emotions, that audio interactions, like telephone, were the sweet spot. That's because telephone seems much higher effort and thus more authentic than email, yet audio interactions allow you to avoid unintentionally leaking nonverbal behavior, which may indicate your true underlying emotions, as can often happen in video or in person. Whereas in visual interactions, you have to worry about all of your body language, for instance, an accidental grimace or smirk. With audio interactions, all you need to do is focus on your tone of voice and word choice. And this choice was consequential, as in my studies, it determined everything from parent satisfaction with their teachers, to how much coworkers were willing to engage with one another going forward, to the degree to which negotiators punished one another with more severe counteroffers. The point of this final part of the PINK framework, goals, is the idea that by defining your interaction goals and understanding the research on how to best achieve those goals, you'll be better able to strategically select the right mode and message to improve your outcomes and avoid situations that risk you making bad impressions and potentially even ruining relationships. For my final book insight, I want to look forward to the future beyond the existing research I outline in the PINK framework. And insight number 5 is that no matter how good artificial intelligence, or AI, becomes at communicating on our behalf, the most important and successful interactions will always have a human component. Imagine receiving a sympathy email from a colleague after the death of a close loved one. The email's supportive, but you immediately recognize this message was AI generated because your colleague doesn't normally use formal words like elevate and profound. After making this observation, you'd probably think your colleague doesn't really care about you because they used AI to write the message rather than doing it themselves. This is because when it comes to the most important interactions, there's no replacement for the human touch. Researchers have found that people instinctively think of everything from songs to recipes to paintings as more authentic when we believe they were created by a human as opposed to identical ones that are AI generated. The reason is that when something is handcrafted, it just seems more effortful and special. To this point, research has shown that organizations using chatbots often find themselves facing customers who are more skeptical, less engaged, and less willing to complete transactions with what feels like a robotic digital entity. And although in the vast majority of your interactions, it will be impossible for others to tell you used AI to create them on your behalf, all it takes is one slip up for your interaction partner to suspect you used AI rather than wrote the message personally. And then they will question every single virtual interaction you've had with them in the past and wonder, whether you were simply outsourcing your communication and not putting effort into the relationship. And the next question they'll ask themselves is, why are they even interacting with you personally in the first place if all they're doing is really speaking with AI? Of course, there are times where AI can help increase your productivity. Specifically, using AI as an assistant to help with some of the more ancillary aspects of communication, including generating ideas, editing, and summarizing longer conversations, can free up valuable time and mental energy for more complex and nuanced interactions. But especially as AI replacing human communication becomes more common, adding in that human touch to the core parts of the communication and making sure that the words you transmit are actually yours is likely to become an ever more valuable signal of both how much you value the relationship with your interaction partner and how vital you are as a person to that interaction. And to wrap up, I want to thank you for listening to my book bite that suitably I was able to communicate with you today via virtual means. And I hope you find the many lessons contained in my book, Ping, The Secrets of Successful Virtual Communication, valuable to you in both your professional and personal life.